I'm Amy Hugasian. I live in San Francisco, California. I'm originally from the Chicagoland area, and I currently work in the federal government here in San Francisco.
You and I are here together on the waterfront in San Francisco. It has nothing to do with San Francisco. It has everything to do with your ethnic roots and your family's history. And this is the year 2015. And in 1915, there was a hideous genocide of the Armenian people within Turkey. We met on an airplane flying from Chicago, and there we went. You know, so it's obviously something very passionately close to your heart.
Yes. Usually anyone who knows me or has spent a significant amount of time with me knows that my past and my heritage, and part of my heritage, while most people probably talk about a very colorful heritage, mine unfortunately has a dark side, and I'm half Finnish actually and half Armenian. So on my father's side, I'm Armenian, and my grandparents were survivors of the Armenian Genocide. We grew up, my grandmother passed away in the mid-80s, and her husband died in the early 70s. So my memories and hearing about the stories of what happened to her actually was as I was growing up from a young girl into my teenage years. And we heard the horrors and atrocities of what happened to not only them firsthand, but also other family members and other friends, relatives. So we always grew up in the shadow of hearing about the atrocities of the Armenian Genocide and what happened to all of these individuals, a very horrible occurrence that happened from 1915 to 1918.
And some people might not realize, but my reading tells me, I think it was approximately, they estimate around 1.5 million Armenians were mass murdered, butchered, burnt alive.
Correct. That's not uncontroverted. It's in any history. If you research it, which I used to do, I used to write term papers about it growing up. I would question my history teacher in high school, why are we not learning about the Armenian Genocide? The reality is, for sure, at least 1.5 million Armenians perished, and the occurrence of genocide happened in what is today Eastern Turkey. Originally, that was Armenia. That whole area was populated with Armenians, and it was the majority of people who lived in that portion of the country.
So it was the Ottoman Empire.
Correct.
That consumed Armenia, basically.
That's right. And the intent was to demolish an entire race. So when we talk about genocide, it means that the Ottoman Empire and those who were running it were intending to exterminate the full race of the Armenians from that area.
And a strong underlying reason is that they were primarily Christians and they were not Islamic.
Correct. There's many theories. I remember even as a young child asking my father, why? Why would the Turks do this to the Armenians? And of course, the main reason being that Armenians were Christian, and obviously the Ottoman Empire, the majority were Muslim. And so one of the tactics used was to put people on crosses and to yell at them and say, who's going to save you now? Where is your Christ now to save you? And to demolish and desecrate every single church and to stuff people in churches and light them on fire. So it was at the root of the issue was to not only get rid of the Armenians, but get rid of the Christians. And of course, the Armenians being the first group in the entire world to declare themselves as Christians back, I believe it was in the 9th century. So the Armenians have always been Christian, and that they were the first group to proclaim themselves as Christians in the history of the world. So the Turks actually went after them for that reason. There are other reasons that are theorized as well, such as the Armenians were very successful and Turks didn't really like to see that, and so they wanted to demolish people who were successful and people who were succeeding and doing well.
And it seems to me that World War I had much to do with pushing that tipping point. You add into the mix the Turks being allied with the Germans, and then the Armenians not being happy campers. That kind of pushed things over the edge, didn't it?
Yes. The Armenians, when the struggles began and when all of these problems were occurring, there were ambassadors and different individuals present within the area, and they were seeing what was happening, and they were sending messages back to countries that were involved in World War I. And the reality is, other countries had their views on other sites and other matters going on in the world, and not what was going on right there on the eastern portion of the Ottoman Empire. As a result, so many Armenians perished within a short time, and the methodologies used during the Ottoman Empire genocide of the Armenians was even used by Hitler in the Holocaust.
Wow, so he had a model to work from thanks to the Turks.
Correct, and that's documented. The Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. makes reference to it. Hitler is famously quoted as saying, "Who today remembers the annihilation of the Armenians?" Therefore, he proceeded with his mass murders.
Okay, so now we have this interlude. We have the conclusion of World War I, which coincides with the winding down of this mass murder. What happened subsequent after the conclusion of World War I up until, you know, say, World War II?
Well, first of all, speaking from my own experiences, my grandmother specifically, when she was from Kharpert, that was the larger town she was from, her actual village was called Hulakio. And when she was there and extracted from the village, she was quite young, I want to say 8 or 9 years old. And in her own house, when the Turks invaded it, she saw her mother beheaded. And she ran into the hills and hid. There were some caves and hid in there to run from the Turks. She suffered horrible post-traumatic stress syndrome, as far as I can tell, in my experience.
You watched her growing
yes.
up, basically having breakdowns in your living room.
Absolutely. She cared for us and was one of our caregivers as we grew up. She would have flashbacks as to what happened to her. I have no doubt, frankly, that she was raped. She saw her mother beheaded, as I have said, and it was horrible to see these flashbacks, and we're talking probably 50 years, 60 years after she endured such horrors. They still remained with her even up until the day she died.
In your life, growing up in Chicago area, at what point did you get it? Did you understand that ethnological connection and that tragedy?
Yeah, that's a very good question. For me, because, Armenians grow up very tightly knit, and we all talked about it, and it's hard to comprehend.
It remained incomprehensible
yes.
to you for
yes,
a long time, didn't
very
it?
Very much so, to the point, as I may have mentioned, I questioned my history teacher in high school, and I wrote my own term papers about it because, A, I wanted people to know about it. How could they not know? And, B, why wasn't anything done about it? It was very important that there was some kind of acknowledgement or something to rectify the horrors of what had happened to this 1.5 million people, not to mention all of their relatives, and the reality of literally taking the rug out from beneath you. You don't have anything anymore. You don't have your land or your home or anything. You're walking with the shirt on your back through a hot desert. If you survive that, Many people survived it by drinking their own urine. And women killed their own children because they didn't want to see them suffer anymore.
So there literally was a mass exodus.
Absolutely, because the Turks rounded up the men and boys and would kill them right away. So they would line them on a bank of a river, kill them one by one, and push them into the river. Many rivers turned red from the blood. So they would separate the men from the women, and then they put the women and children on death marches through the desert, through the Syrian desert. And many of them ended in, if they survived, ended up in orphanages, as my grandmother did. So from there, if they ended up in the orphanage, hopefully they were eventually found by family members, and many ended up coming to America as well as spread throughout the world. But as I was saying, in terms of what happened, it remained with every single survivor up until the time that they perished. I think today there's only a few survivors left in the world. But with that said, the children of the survivors and the grandchildren still carry with them this horrible burden of what they saw their ancestors go through. And it sticks with us because of us knowing what happened to them and not knowing that there's ever been any type of acknowledgement or, I don't want to say repercussion, but something to rectify what transpired. Acknowledgement is at least the first step.
That's the biggest disconnect for so many of us. I remember when Obama, after he was first elected, he went to Turkey. And there, all my Armenian friends, everybody I knew, was so excited because they knew that he would now get the Turks to have some mea culpa and some admission of having been involved in creating this genocide. And yet, you can take it from here.
From the aspect of the Turks, there's not been an acknowledgement at all. What is usually stated is there were some uprisings and we tried to quell those uprisings. And it wasn't that they were trying to get rid of a whole race. So that's usually how the Turks characterize what transpired from those years, 1915 to 1918. They also say that the Kurdish were uprising and the Kurds were getting into arguments with the Armenians, and the Turks came along to quell those arguments. So the reality is there's never been the acknowledgement or never an apology or anything. And frankly, it has snowballed. It has gotten bigger and bigger. So now it just continues. That denial, apparently it's the continued path of denial. Because if they were to go back, there's a large snowball to undo.
And an underlying element we didn't really touch on too much, but it has a lot to do with religion. It has to do with the Islamic view of the world versus Christian, and which was touched on a bit, but never ceases to amaze me the uncanny parallels to what we read and hear about with ISIS or ISIL and some of their actions. They're very identical.
It is, yes. In today's day with ISIS and the tactics they use, for Armenians, it's reliving what transpired 100 years ago. Obviously, they didn't live during that time frame, but knowing what happened to our grandparents and our ancestors, the exact tactics and exact types of measures are being used today by ISIS. And it's eerie. It really boggles the mind, because how can those types of activities continue even today? But you are absolutely right. The parallels are uncanny. It's the same situation, because it's the Muslims going after Christians. And very similar. Syria, you could also say the same exact right.
Going out of context, but go back in time, the 20s and 30s, you had Ataturk, who is to this day held as bigger than life a George Washington in Turkey. And my question is, he's never been blamed for any act of participation or condoning or whatever, but do you know anything about his positions or what?
Well, I remember in history books and from my review of genocide is Kemal Ataturk. There were masterminds, and he's just continued that denial, but also proclaimed the Islam or Muslim aspect to be the first and foremost of importance. And so
but he was much more secular than anybody before or after.
Right.
And that's why I thought, well, maybe, he would have gone there.
He could have, but, it didn't happen. And subsequent leaders have certainly shunned the topic and found another way to, frankly, sweep it under the rug, which how can you sweep the deaths and extermination of a large group of 1.5 million people? To me, that's impossible. You cannot do that. And here we are 100 years later, it has not yet been recognized by the Turkish.
Moving forward on a positive note, Armenians in Armenia. Can you touch on that?
Sure. Armenians in Armenia are very proud. I've only visited Armenia one time, and that was in the 90s, and it's changed a lot since that time. But the reality is they have a land. Now, it was obviously started out as a Soviet state and then became its own country. But for the Armenians, it's a sense of pride to be able to go back to our country and be in a place where it's Armenians. The negatives for Armenia is that the border between Turkey and Armenia is closed. So there's no trade or ability to cross that border, which is very difficult for Armenians because there's some significant lands and territories right across the border. For instance, the former capital, Ani, the capital, you can literally see the amazing and beautiful ruins from the border of Armenia, yet you can't cross into the territory to visit it. On the flip side, I've actually visited eastern Turkey and returned to Kharper and Hulakyu, where my grandmother and grandfather were from. And then you stand on the side of Ani and you see Armenia, but yet you can't cross. That's a very unfortunate aspect. And perhaps if Turkey were to at least acknowledge genocide, things could move forward. And it's unfortunate because Armenia is landlocked. There's no water or ability. There's not even, I believe, there's no oil pipelines that are going through Armenia. So
is it agricultural based primarily?
It's more agricultural based. And as a group, the Armenians are very lucrative and do very well, but it makes the country it's much more difficult for the people in the country when it's landlocked and there's less trade going through when one of the borders is closed.
Looking to the future.
Into the future, we all remain hopeful that there is going to be an acknowledgement of the Armenian genocide, and everyone likes to say, I hope it happens at least in my lifetime. For instance, my grandmother, who was a survivor of the Armenian genocide, as well as my grandfather, it didn't happen while they lived. And for me, I find that unfortunate because having seen the horrible aspects of what they went through and hearing the horrible stories, truly, there needs to be some kind of apology, something so that these horrible, sad things can be put to rest and people can progress and move on. So I remain hopeful. I would like to see that it would happen. It's unfortunate that it hasn't happened to date. But being a hopeful group and having survived what everyone has survived thus far, we will still continue to persevere and move forward.
How do you build that momentum? How do you ramp things up to that tipping point where it could truly happen?
Well, there was a large coming together of many groups. The Pope, he acknowledged the Armenian genocide. So the reality is there have been some small successes. And I think with those continued small successes which you link together and the coming together of everyone being unified, and also educating people about the actual Armenian genocide. I think the more people understand and see that this is a problem that needs to be fixed, it needs to be recognized, and it needs to be recognized as the genocide, I think when people are educated and see that, and the Armenians come together as one unified group, which they are, and the more people know about it, then I think the acknowledgement will happen.
Amy, it has been a delight to visit with you and see you again.
Thank you. It was great to see you too. Having met on the airplane and now here we are talking about a topic that is actually very near and dear to my heart, I really appreciate it.
A website a listener could go to learn more?
The ANC, Armenian National Committee, is very active. The Armenian Assembly is also another. Both are lobbyist groups in Washington, D.C. You can Google Armenian genocide and many topics will come up.
Thanks again.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from downtown San Francisco, California, where we've been visiting with Amy Ugazin. The underbed music in this show is performed by the Shugakan Folk Ensemble, featuring the music of Western Armenia, and the Chukasian Armenian Ensemble, featuring Armenian classical, folkloric, and troubadour music.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomascwilmer.com. Our associate producers from the San Francisco Bay Area include Molly Blaisdell, Lori King, and Susie Rodriguez. Melissa Corbin reporting, Tennessee. Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada. Kim Schneider from Michigan. Elaine Masters in San Diego. Julie Henning, Eugene, Oregon. Rebecca Bingham, Hot Springs, Arkansas. And Steve Cook, contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of Arkansongs on NPR affiliate KUAR.